Welcome to the Kokura Podcast, stories for engagement and change. David Firth and Cherise McCrory have each spent their lives facilitating dialogue that generates an increased capacity for clarity, action, and progress. And now they've come together to apply those skills to some of the most difficult and complex problems facing the world. The Kokura Podcast is a home for positive stories, dialogue, and radical leadership ideas that they believe will save the world.
So, hello, Cherise.
Hey, David.
How's it going?
It is so amazing these days in the world of Cherise and David.
And hopefully for everybody else as well. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to this series and offering your thoughts and audio files, giving us your feedback and ideas. We're loving hearing from you. This is the final area of the 9 fundamental beliefs that we dedicated this series to, the 9 fundamental beliefs which are underpinning the Kokura work. And this one is, whereas the other ones I think can be accessed in any order, this one for me, Cherise, is the final one, the ultimate one, because it is action as a fear killer, action as the fear killer.
Beautiful, David. I've lived my whole life in the exploration of fear. And it's always been a real curiosity for me. And, sometimes I would look at someone and think, wow, that person is fearless. And just recently, I've been considering what makes a person fearless. So I'm really looking forward today, David, to kind of developing that idea and to helping our listeners see another way to handle and manage and conquer and love their fear.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So in this episode, we're going to be looking at different aspects of fear, but most importantly, how action is that fear killer, and everything that we're doing in Kokura is all about getting people into action, getting communities, towns, organizations, institutions into action, because obviously that's how the world gets changed, is when people take action. So, we're not interested here in just sharing ideas for their own sake, but getting us into action. And we're going to end, as we always do, with a challenge to you, dear listener, about how you might apply some of what you've heard over the next 30 minutes or so from us. But Cherise, I know one of the things that you've used consistently in your own coaching practice is a process around fear and how to get over that and beyond fear.
Yes. Thank you, David. So fear is really the only thing that ever stops us. And you could argue that with me all day long, but I think if we were to have a conversation, we would come to that. It's the thing that comes from our ego. It's the thinking that we bring to a situation that causes us to stop because we're afraid. So over the years working with clients, I've developed a 3-part process that I've used many, many, many times with myself and with clients, which is designed to help you cut through your thoughts around fear. And I'll just go ahead and offer that to you all and to you, David. The 3-step fear process begins with step number 1, which is identifying the fear. David White has a really amazing quote, and he says, "It is not the thing you fear that you must deal with. It is the mother of the thing you fear, the very thing that has given birth to the nightmare." And I love that, David, because so often we get to a surface fear and we think, oh, that's the fear. So, for example, one time I was working with a client who had been in the Air Force and had flown planes and was retired from the Air Force and since had not been on a plane, was petrified of flying, which I found very curious since he spent many, many years in airplanes, actually in the cockpit. So what arrived for us is that really his fear, when I started to probe with him and he started to think about it, it isn't about flying itself. It's about the loss of control. And once he got to see that that was really where his fear was, it changed the conversation completely. It changed the way he saw it. It changed what he thought he could do about it. So that it's really, really important to get underneath the actual origin of the fear. And sometimes it's sneaky and it doesn't look like what you think it looks like. So that's step number one, getting up close and personal with what it really is. Mm. Step number two is all about creating logic around it. So I remember from Dale Carnegie years and years and years ago, I took the signature Dale Carnegie course when I was in my early 20s. And in that course, one of the strategies that he taught was decide what's the worst thing that can happen. And that's a big part of step two in my three-part fear process, because if you just imagine what's the worst thing that could possibly happen, and in that imagining, what has happened before that supports that it could happen? Is there some evidence? Do you have history? Has this happened in a way that you are afraid it's going to happen again? And if so, guess what? You're still standing. What's the worst that can happen? Nobody usually dies. So understanding what's the worst that can happen and then following that thought with, can I survive that? And the answer is always yes. So putting logic around it, what's the likelihood of something bad happening? Usually what happens is something between our worst case scenario that we can possibly imagine happening and the ideal situation. So it's in the middle somewhere in practice. And then the third step is, you might imagine, get into action, right? Even if you can't crack the whole nut at one time, you can take a baby step forward. There's always a baby step that you can take. So step one, identify the fear. Step two, put some logic around it. What's the worst that can happen? And step three would be get into immediate action.
Beautiful. Love it. Clear as a bell. Clear as a bell. And it's so true, you know, just listening to you, Charisse, it's so true about action and fear cannot coexist. You know, you can't be in action and frightened. You know, you can't be stopped when you're in action, you know. And I'm just thinking, you know, one of the threads in my work over the years is, you know, as you know, has been the teaching people communication skills and public speaking, you know, that's how I crossed over from theater all those years ago. And you know, what people experience is that the anticipation of the talk is where the fear is, you know, which is all not action. It's thinking about it.
Right.
You know, but when they're actually up and they're speaking, you know, the fear diminishes, you know, and eventually when they get into the talk, which is into pure action, then the fear is gone. So it's all the anticipation and not the action itself. Yeah.
I would put one caveat in our in today's episode. So if you live in a jungle and you are being chased by a predator, let's say a lion, that is action and fear existing at the same time.
Yes.
Most of us listening to this podcast probably aren't encountered by lions often. You know, I think it's useful to insert that when it's physical danger, that's a whole other thing.
Yes.
From what this is all the mind stuff. This is the stuff we make up in our head, the ego part of us that wants to keep us safe. Sure. That's really where all these thinking, this fear thinking comes from.
Sure, sure. And those who are way more knowledgeable about how the brain works than I am would say probably that's exactly what's going on when we, you know, when we think we are frightened about the doing the talk in front of a group of people. You know, what's being activated is the old survival part of the brain, which is basically can't distinguish between I'm being chased by the big cat or
exactly.
I'm speaking to a group. Yeah. So
it's the fight or flight response that's inbred into our DNA, and it does come from our days when we were chased by lions and tigers and bears.
Yes.
And I'm not a brain expert either. However, I love studying it and I read a lot about it. And I think that there is a lot of science around what happens with our central nervous system.
Yes.
And in our daily lives, when we allow that monkey mind, that fear to produce our action, and we sit around thinking about it, that does have a physical impact on our central nervous system. And that fight or flight response is active and alive, even if we aren't being chased by an animal.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely right. And, you know, I've been thinking about the way that fear is the thing that stops us getting into action. And I want to just give a couple of examples of that. One from the world of individual action and one from the group, because, you know, as listeners will know, having listened to our podcast, you know, we are keen to apply all of these insights that are common in the personal development world, but into the world of groups, you know. So in a minute, I'm going to give an example of how a group can get frightened about getting into action. But the sort of individual example is, you know, back from I did some work in a sales organization and training people to be on the phone to make, you know, sales calls over the phone, telemarketing calls, you know, and there was one particular person who was a genius at preparing to be on the phone. And this person had lists, and this person kept sharpening their pencil, you know, to make more lists, and this person getting another glass of water, you know, and this person was probably doing internal visualizations, all that sort of stuff, you know. And all of that, of course, was a mask for actually picking up the phone and making
the call. That's what I think. That's what's referred to as paralysis by analysis, David.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting that we get curious about how these things show up, and to understand that we may not label that. You may not label that as fearful behavior. The person, the fact that the person was putting a lot of preparation, and in fact, that person would justify the behavior as perfectly rational, a professional thing to do to get ready for a call. But, you know, we can see that in fact, it's all coming down. The root of it is a sort of fear-based response to the world.
Yeah.
The group example is something that I've seen a lot in groups at the point where, you know, you take a group through an expansive conversation about the future they want to create. You take them, you give them the space to explore the issue or challenge or opportunity from so many different angles. And so there's this divergent movement of conversation, getting all these great ideas out there, all these possibilities, hugely exciting, lots of energy. You know, people rise up the ladder of consciousness when they're talking from that place. You know, so there's lots of energy in the room. And then, you know, then the process is to begin to converge and sort of begin to make some choices about what actions to take forward. And I've experienced often that a group can get into fear at that point, and they've no idea that it would be fear. And how it often manifests, I found, Charisse, is that the group begins to ask questions about the process. They say, can you just tell us that one more time? So what we're being asked to do is blah, 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 blah. And it's a mask for making the choice. And it's something that rises up when the group is going to be asked to actually make a choice about we're going to do this as opposed to that. It, you know, that sort of anxiety, that fear can bubble up, and you know, and so part of the job is just help people through that, you know, and
right. Take
one or two good faith responses to the questions about the process, but then, you know, keep saying, no, but we are here to make a choice. Let's do this thing, you know.
Gentle nudge forward. So, you know, that makes me, that reminds me, David, of how, you know, what is it that people are actually afraid of in those cases? We are hardwired to not be wrong, to not look foolish, to not dominate, to fit in, to belong. And yeah. So in the group setting like that, what if I'm in the wrong conversation, or what if I don't contribute the way I think I will, or, you know, all the things that image the ego things that come up when someone's considering speaking up or being involved in a conversation. And since Kokora is all about conversations, I think it's useful to point out that conversations that you're talking about in a large group setting is action. And I think we've mentioned in another episode, David, how some people don't really view talking,
yes,
conversing, having dialogue as an action orientation. And it absolutely is. It's how everything gets solved and created,
sure,
through language and conversation. So, you know, the fear that comes up when people are in creative, collaborative, difficult conversations is that they're going to look stupid.
Yes.
And there's no way through that, but through it, right? You sure. Know, you can choose to be inactive. And if you do that, then you're not contributing. You may have some energetic contribution, which wouldn't be through language, but it's not action.
Sure. Yeah, and actually, you know, in that example again, it's the conversation doesn't stop being creative. The conversation about, hey, tell us about the process one more time and how exactly are we going to vote, you know, is a creative act. It just creates stuckness, you know, as opposed to whereas, and here's something we have talked about again in other episodes, whereas what that needs is the conversation to shift into commitment, you know. And so I'm going to stand up and put my vote here. You know,
yes,
that's a conversation for commitment, and that moves us forward. You know, so it just occurred to me that the conversation's always creating something, but is it moving forward or is it keeping us stuck? You know,
that's gorgeous.
The light side, you know, of that sort of fear of looking stupid as well. The other side of that is just a well-intentioned desire to make the right choice. You know, to get it to have the best possible result. You know, and I think, you know, there's something else here about what we believe in Kokora around action and the action that people will take out of moving forward through the Kokora process. And it's very different from how often particularly businesses and organizations think about action. You know, the idea is that we have some options and we make our choices and we take a decision and we then act and implement the decision. And the way we look at it in Kokora is slightly different in that you do the same thing, you get to a decision and you begin to take action, but then the action begins to teach you what's working and what's not. So action here is not one implemented plan towards some sort of nirvana of success. It's an iterative process. You know, that the actions we take in the first week beyond the meeting are going to take us in this direction. And then we need to be reflective. We need to be conscious of the actions we're taking. Are they taking us towards what we thought was the right direction or away from? You know, what do we need to adjust? So every action is leading to further actions. You know, so in that sense, you know, we're discovering the future in our actions as opposed to, yeah, good. So we now know what it's supposed to look like. Let's do it.
So what I hear you saying there, David, is that when we decide upon action, it doesn't have to be action that predicts the entire flow of what's happening next. It just needs to be that little baby step that is iterative and takes us into what will then clearly be the next action.
Sure.
This is an outcome which always informs us toward what the next action could be. That's the difference between starting and not starting. So yeah. I think I love that in the world of entrepreneurs, how, you know, it's just such a thing to have a business idea and to have it up in your head and to be one of those people who does all the research and make sure that they, you know, they've looked at all the competition and they've got everything, every I is dotted and every T is crossed. And by goodness, they have a plan and they haven't taken one step forward to create the business other than the plan. So my coaching is always, let's just get started. Like, take a step forward that feels really generous and loving and gentle, and then see how you feel.
Yes.
Because starting is magical. Oh my gosh, when someone starts something, and I truly believe that when you begin, the universe conspires to help you. It does not like a vacuum, right? That old phrase, the universe abhors a vacuum, and it's so true. So once you do get started with something, then it's going to be very clear what's next for you.
Yeah, that's fabulous. That's fabulous. And then, you know, we would ask all of us to, particularly those, you know, in any sort of leadership position or around a group of people who are taking action, that this requires that we see that there is no failure from this perspective.
Right.
Now, and it's becoming a bit of a cliche now to talk about, there's no failure, it's always learning, but that's the truth of it. You know, every action, we don't know always how our actions are going to work out, what's going to ripple out of the actions that we take, how the world, the context might shift when we've taken the action that we'd planned to take. But we can always, whether the action produces what we would label as failure or what we label as success, we can always say, and how can we learn from this? What needs to be slightly different during this next period of time?
Yeah, I call that winning or learning. Because it's not really, unless you call it a loss, it isn't a loss, because there's always something to see. Whenever something doesn't go exactly the way you thought it would, there's always something to learn every single time.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the old, you know, no, I'm not talking about T-ball and, you know, fifth graders where everyone wins. It's not that.
No.
No, because there definitely is, you know, an upper hand somehow in every situation. There's somebody wins.
Sure.
And also I think when I'm thinking about all that fearlessness and the appearance of fearless, I think fear is always, always, always with us. And yeah. I think it's supposed to be with, it's meant to be part of our process. And yeah. when I a long time ago, I had a program that I called Full Out and Fearless. Mm. And people were very attracted to that name. And full out meant to me just, you know, I am moving forward, full out action. And fearless meant I'm not allowing the fear to stop me. Some people mistook fearless for being without fear. And it was always interesting to have that conversation because I personally have fear every day. Yes. And I can imagine that everyone listening to this can also relate to that. The fear is definitely there. And what matters is what we do with that fear. So if I'm afraid of something, I've come to believe that it's pointing me in a direction towards something that I need to see, something to explore, something to be curious about. Why am I afraid? Mm. Again, you know, you can go back to the three-part process to sort of even more deeply understand that. And almost every time that I can point to in my history, it has led to something really magnificent.
Excellent.
So I could say I'm fearless, David. And the only reason I'm fearless is because I take action. I'm a quick start. I start things. I'm really good at starting things.
Yes.
And some people would point to that about me, that trait in me, and say, wow, she's really fearless. It's not true. I am not without fear.
No. But you're taking the action.
I make the commitment to take the action, and I continue to take the action until it doesn't make sense to take that action anymore.
Yeah. So let's do, I think there's something that's so compelling for us all as human beings is to be in movement, you know, is to be in action.
Mm.
We sense that there is something wrong when it feels wrong to be, inverted commas, stuck. You know, it feels wrong to be worried and anxious. It doesn't feel like this is how we, natural as it is, it doesn't feel like that's the ultimate state. You know, beyond that is movement and getting into action. And whether that's a small baby step or, you know, what might appear to be an outrageous action, it's moving things forward.
Yeah, that's really gorgeous. And movement, you know, if you think about our roots, when we were being chased by animals, the movement was such a part of our existence when we were making tools and learning how to live in the world. And, you know, today, one of the antidotes for stress is workouts. You know, I know that when I do my walk in the morning, I start the day much more calm and centered.
Yes.
So even from a physical standpoint, that there is power in movement.
That's great.
And, you know, in the world today, just to touch on one other aspect of fear, just to talk for a minute about apathy, you know, apathy is also a dangerous place to be. So in the world of disagreements and politics and all of the activity and dialogue that's going on that makes us mad and is very, very tempting to check out and numb out and become apathetic. I think, you know, that there's a lot of danger in that. And it's even worse than inaction. It's not caring.
And so
I think, you know, there's something to be said also for recognizing apathy when it exists in you and then deciding what's a baby step I can take to start to care about this thing again.
Yeah. And yes, I'm thinking of the, you know, what's one of the classic ways that human beings in a society make a complaint? They say, here's a complaint, you know, this is what's wrong. And then the line, someone ought to do something about that. And if we break that down, someone, you know, a human being ought to do, in other words, take action about that. Yeah. So we know that action is required. And, you know, I'm just thinking that this is another way we give away our power, because in the world of the front of the room, in the world of the hierarchy, there's always somebody willing to stand up and say, oh, I'll take that. I'll do that action. I'll promise you this action. I'll promise you this outcome. I'll promise you this result. And it's how this society has been wired. Our society has been wired for years and years and years, that somebody will come along and take the action on our behalf. And then we, you know, where that leaves us is we get to make comments about whether or not the action is the right one or is having the desired effect, you know, and I'm just thinking it that, you know, one of the things I love about our work is that we tell people to resist that temptation, and actually it doesn't become part of the process. You know, this isn't about giving an action plan, a recommendation to somebody else to do something. It's about what are we prepared to do? Having talked through the issue, having talked through the challenge that we have, and then having come up with solutions, now the next step is what will we do about this?
Yeah, there's so many layers of fear in that idea, David, that fear of, I don't have any say, I don't have any control, or I don't have any power, and I'm not important enough to make a difference.
Yes.
And there's fear layered all the way through that thought process. And also the whole idea from Nathaniel Brandon, no one's coming to save you. Mm-hmm. That really is true. And yet we've structured our entire world based on looking to the leaders at the front of the room to do just that. And so Kokora is the it's the kryptonite to that. It's the anti that. We want you to look to the front of the room when there needs to be a tiebreaker, or when someone could be modeling a great way to have a conversation that's inclusive and inspired and enlightened.
Yeah, or get some inspiration, or get an idea. Great, and then take back the okay. Thank you for all of that in front of the room. You know, here's what we are prepared to do about that. Here's how what I'm prepared to do about that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we are. Kokora is an antidote to disappointment in all these.
and to apathy.
Yeah. Yeah, and to apathy, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, because the thing is, even the leaders who says I'm here to save you can't. You know, right. they cannot do enough. They cannot in anything that's worthwhile of a situation or challenge or opportunity, that they can't do it on their own. And so even when it feels good to have had that fear eliminated by somebody coming along saying, I can do that. You know, it's not going to come out well, you know. And so I just love inviting people into the conversation about what could be different, what's the future they want to create, and how might they actively contribute to that.
And behind that thought, David, is the access, the capacity building for each and every person on the planet to discover their own personal power and their own ability to create the life they want. And that there's nothing more important than that. And it does require action.
Yes.
Loving, gentle action. Sometimes it takes mad action. Sometimes it means, you know, burn it down and start again. Sometimes it's somewhere in between.
Yes.
But there's always a call when your personal expression wants to be born. There's always some action to take. Always.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. So, Charisse, as we begin to wrap up this episode, I believe you have a challenge for us all.
I do. I have a challenge. I would like to invite each of you to try on the 3-part fear process. If you go to our website and to the podcast page, you'll see the show notes. And in the show notes, it'll be listed out. But just to review, the first step is to identify the origin of the fear that you're feeling. Part 2 would be to identify some logic around it and to ask yourself, what's the worst thing that could happen? And then step 3 is to get into action. So what I'm inviting you all to do is decide to try that process out on something that's in your life, something maybe at work, maybe at home, maybe in a group activity. Find something that you've been stuck about and walk yourself through that process. And when you've finished, go to the podcast page and leave an audio message or send us a note let us know what happened. We always want to, the stories are the most compelling part of this podcast and this movement. So we'd really love to hear where you started out, what your experience was with the process, and then what was the outcome, what happened, because something great is going to happen.
That's terrific. And as always, if you are so moved, go to iTunes, and it would be fabulous if you've enjoyed this and other episodes to leave us a review, so that iTunes can help us get these messages out there. We are determined to spread this as wide as we possibly can. We want to be the most popular podcast on iTunes that has the word Kokwara in the title.
Amen, brother.
And anything above that, beyond that, would be great too. So please do, if you feel moved, do send us a review. Go to our podcasting page and get all that great material, the downloads and accompanying material to this episode and others by subscribing there, Kokwara.com. That's Kokwara.com. And then we'll see you next time.
Yes, thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Kokwara podcast. For more information about the global experiment, which is the Kokwara project, and how you can be involved, visit David and Charisse at www.kokwara.com and subscribe to join the movement. That's Kokwara.com.